This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit Lounge. Now, normally it's the priest, the pom and the puff, but we've lost the priest. She's somewhere in Sydney. Good evening, priesty, if you're listening. And we've got a sickly puff. How are you feeling, darling?
Oh, I'm feeling a little bit worse for wear, but I thought I must come in for tonight's show because it's going to be very exciting.
Because otherwise I'd be on my own talking to myself.
Something like that.
But don't worry, listeners, you don't have to listen to me babbling away for an hour because we are joined once again by the delightful Sean Goddard Chase, who is a biblical historian, having studied theology, anthropology, and history. You've recently started your own counselling business and you identify as a pagan priest. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good to see you. And in case people haven't guessed it already, tonight we're talking about paganism. And now, I've had such fun researching this because when I hear that word, my imagination immediately conjures up thoughts of witches, wizards, druids, satanic rituals, obscure cultures, a mixture of magic and evil. And yes, I have been watching Harry Potter. I am a complete nutcase for Harry Potter. But forgetting Harry Potter for a minute, what is paganism?
Paganism, the way that most people look at it, is that it's anything that's of a spiritual nature that is not based in the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam.
Right.
Anything that doesn't fall into those is what people normally now consider to be paganism. Mm-hmm. There are probably certain spiritual paths that don't consider themselves to be pagan, because mm-hmm. It was actually a derogatory term used by Romans to begin with, from the city, to actually have a go at people who lived in the country and were rustic, which is actually what it means, is rustic.
Now, this is where the negativity comes into that word, isn't it?
Yes.
And I know the media don't do you any favours in terms of how they misrepresent the whole thing. But again, apart from thinking about wizards and druids and things, but if people said pagan to me, even the sound of the word onomatopoeically, it sounds, I don't know, it just sounds dark.
It does.
And people jump to the wrong conclusion, don't they?
And I think that's why it was chosen, if you will. The word itself, pagus, was the original word. Normally rustic is what it means. And it's basically that people from the country are not as clever as the people from the city. So it stems back a lot further than mm-hmm. that. There's been a battle between city folk and country folk. Mm-hmm. One of the earliest recorded books on it is actually the Epic of Gilgamesh, mm-hmm. which is from Sumeria. And the copy that we have at the moment is actually a copy, but it was written, the one that we have is from 3800 BCE.
Wow.
So, and it sort of predates, they actually talk about the Epic of Gilgamesh, Abraham, and the city of Ur, which is where it was based, Uruk, Sumeria. They actually talk about this epic. And there's a character called Enkidu, mm-hmm. who was created from nature. And there's Gilgamesh, who's the if you will, the hero, the king of a city, and he has to conquer Enkidu. So there's this battle between the two forces a long, long time.
So is that why it is often referred to as a nature-based religion?
Yes, it
is. Okay, so this is the connection.
That's the connection.
With the land and the
country,
environment.
Yeah, it's the, as I said when I first came to see you guys, it's the divine is within nature, not apart from nature.
Yeah.
And that's how it's looked at. That's where the nature comes from. A lot of the symbology, you've got the green man, who's basically either a male or a female, mm-hmm. Which is made up of leaves and trees, mm-hmm. which you see throughout lots and lots of churches, mm-hmm. which I think is great. You have the horned god, which is where you then get the devil mm-hmm. worshipping coming from. And the horned god was that the god was within the animal kingdom. He was a part of.
Okay.
The divine was a part of everything. So you have these two images, if you will, uh-huh. which then get, of course, turned into something dark and sinister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff. And in the stuff that I was reading, it seems to have originated, in terms of the Atlas and the world as we know it currently, a lot of it seems to have originated in Europe. Is that right?
It started, part of it's in Europe, your Celts, the Celtic mm-hmm. migration, which actually starts at the, I'm not exactly sure, but it's actually within Russia, and they migrate. There's this big migration, and it's actually a form of Celtic, but also Indian, Hindu, Dravidic, which is the original
India Indian. As in India, not Red Indians.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. India, yeah, Hindu, which is where you get the Indo-European culture. Mm. And that's sort of the basis, if you will, of paganism.
Fascinating. And one last question, because then we're going to go to some music. And when and who, obviously it was people travelling and migrating to Australia, when and who brought it to Australia, paganism?
As early as the 1850s and 60s in the Dandenongs, there were actually there was actually Druids who migrated and started planting in the Dandenongs, but also the Blue Mountains, Sydney. You've also got people like Madame Blavatsky who started the Theosophical Society.
Okay.
There are a lot of pagans within that society as well. So there's little bits and pieces
They're
here
all
and there.
Around.
Yes.
Fascinating. We're going to take a break, and we've had some fun with the music this week because we're going to play Bjork and Pagan Poetry. And you're back with us on the Spirit Lounge this evening. We're here every Monday night on Joy 94.9 between 9 and 10 o'clock. And you're with the Pom and the Puff, who's feeling a bit sickly, so we'll just get a little bit of grunting from him,
I think. Just a little bit of, I'm here. I'm pushing all the buttons.
But we're joined again by Sean Goddard-Chase. Great to see you back, Sean. And tonight we're talking about paganism. Now, before we pick up our conversation on paganism, I would just like to say thank you very much to Vicky from North Fitzroy. Vicky, we've had your email in, which is just absolutely delightful. It's far too long to read over the airwaves. But Vicky listened to our show a few weeks ago when we had Katriana on from the Creative Peace Centre in Richmond. And as a consequence, Vicky is now feeling much better having liaised with Katriana. Just an absolutely heartwarming email. Thank you so much. And we hope you continue to feel better and better. Now, we're talking about paganism tonight. And so if you have any thoughts, ideas, opinions about paganism, if you have experience of paganism, you might be a pagan. Please get in touch on SMS 0427 Joy 949. You can phone on 1300 Joy 949 and you can email onair@joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or any contribution to make. Now, we have had one email in which I'd like to read out, and then Sean, if you'd like to respond to this, that would be fabulous. The email goes like this. Does anyone seriously suggest that paganism is any better in its consequences than the Abrahamic religions? Forced temple prostitution, human sacrifice, and general non-scientific irrationality? Big question, and that's from Robert Pascovale.
Forced temple prostitution. Depending on which way you're looking at it, most of the historians who have talked about it actually, unfortunately, come from a biblical background, if you will. What it was that within Canaan itself, they actually had male and female, what we call prostitutes. They actually weren't. They were priests and priestesses. And what would happen is that when you reached a certain age, you would actually go to the temple and you would actually learn about sex, because it was considered a very natural part of the world, which I think today it still is. I think it is anyway. And that's what the actual prostitutes were for. They, of course, became demonized. They were prostitutes. They sold themselves and so forth. You would pay a fee when you went, which went to the upkeep of the temple, like a tithe of any other description. But what they were teaching was sexuality, to be comfortable within yourself, whether you're male or female. So, and that's what it was basically about.
Why did it get the label prostitution then? Because money changed hands? Or?
It was, yeah. Some of the descriptions that we have left now were from a Judaic sources, which of course looked down upon the practice that it was actually prostitution. Sex within Judaica was sort of frowned upon. It's not a good thing to talk about. And like most things, when you would find something, you'd sort of demonise it, if you will, to say that they thought it was bad, and that's how it's continued on until now.
Up until how recently would this practice be?
It has probably happened in places, but it probably died out about probably about 1500 BCE is when the temples sort of started, when Israel, of course, changed hands and became more of a Jewish state, mm-hmm. kingdoms, upper and lower. So, yeah.
Yep.
So it hasn't been around for quite some time.
Okay. And he's talking about human sacrifice as well. It's all a bit scary.
Look, there's different people from all over the world that have practiced human sacrifice. Some of them consider themselves to be pagan, others don't. The Druids were considered to have practiced human sacrifice. The Mayans practiced human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
The Mayans did it because they believed that blood was actually a gift from their gods, so that when you were sacrificed, you're actually giving it back mm-hmm. to the gods. So normally, as we look at it, I mean, a bright picture is that they were quite happy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there were plenty who weren't. And the Druids used to, yeah, you know, the Druids would, one of the stories was that they would actually do human sacrifices when putting up buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And Stonehenge supposedly was also, there was human sacrifices made to appease in some ways the gods as an mm-hmm. offering.
But this is so long ago, I'm hoping, that really no one's very sure if this was reality or pure myth.
There are the human sacrifice itself was actually reality. There are enough evidence to say that it was. So it did actually happen.
Yeah.
But very, very long time ago.
Sure.
Look, there are probably people to this day who probably think that because it's part of that ancient tradition, they should bring it back. Mm. But it was one way of looking at the world, if you will. I think we've actually evolved since that.
Indeed.
Indeed. Everybody else. So, paganism's not about human sacrifice and forced temporal prostitution and also irrational scientific... scientific irrationality.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the leading theorists at the moment on quantum mechanics and quantum physics are actually pagans.
Really?
Yes. So that may be something that people would like to look into.
Mm-hmm.
There's a paper by, I'm really sorry about this, I can't remember the gentleman's name at Oxford. He's a pagan, and he actually uses quantum physics and quantum mechanics mm-hmm. to explain how magic works.
Mm, okay.
So,
it's a scientific answer.
Yeah.
Or rationale.
And that's what they're looking at. It's like anything else.
Mm.
Science is just another way of looking mm-hmm. at of the way the universe works.
Now, you identify yourself as a pagan priest.
Mm.
So how do you get to become a priest?
I was actually taught by a teacher. And I wasn't part of a coven or anything. A lot of people, depending if you're Wiccan and so forth, belong mm-hmm. to covens and become priests that way. I studied with her for about 5 years before she turned around one day and gave me the ring that I wear to mm-hmm. this day. And she had picked it up from a friend of hers. It was known as the Ring of Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the trait that you show the most of when you're learning, the ring represents. So I was considered to be wise. I'm sure there are people out there who may strongly disagree with that and others who wouldn't. But and that's how I wasn't ordained. There wasn't any holy oils spread over my body or anything like that. It was a very simple
mm-hmm.
Ceremony in itself, and it was how I identified myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't consider myself to be a witch or a sorcerer or a wizard or any of those kind mm-hmm. of things. I've always been very community minded,
mm-hmm.
and for me, a priest is someone who looks after their community when mm-hmm. people are struggling
mm-hmm.
and need, you know, help. They'll come and say priest.
I guess it's also you've reached a level of knowledge. And then you become the teacher as well, don't you,
yes.
as a priest?
Yeah, which I have done. I've there's quite a few people I think would consider themselves to be my student, or students, I should say. But they've taught me at the same time, so which has been good.
So fundamentally, what do pagans believe in?
That's a really tricky question because it depends upon what, as I say, path you're following.
Which sect or...?
Which sect, which outlook...
Okay.
You've got Wiccan, the Wiccan faith
uh-huh.
In Australia, which was recreated by Gerald Gardner in mm-hmm. the 1950s in England,
mm-hmm.
Which is a very hierarchical. They have a high priest, a high priestess. They're covens of 13 individuals. And you are initiated as you move
right.
up through.
So that's quite hierarchical.
That's quite hierarchical. You have shamanism,
uh-huh.
Depending on where you are.
Which one do you follow?
All of them, to be honest.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, well, I am. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be. Well, that's the thing, because I've got friends who call me a shaman.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who call me a priest, a wizard, a witch, all sorts of other derogatory terminologies as well. I don't have a particular path now that I follow.
Okay, you follow your own path.
Follow my own path, and as my knowledge has grown, I sort of look at all of them as being actually the same, just looking at things differently.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things is that there's not one god. Mm-hmm. There's normally a god and a goddess.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on who you talk at, the goddess is actually the greater of the two.
Well, of course she is.
You know, especially when you when you're walking amongst feminists. There are multiple gods and goddesses amongst mm-hmm. other ones. If you're looking at Shinto, there's about 8 million
mm-hmm.
of them. You know, there are people I know who've actually started worshipping the old Nordic and Greek pantheon, mm. where there are 13 different
mm-hmm.
gods and goddesses within there. North American Indians, they've got a whole plethora of gods and spirits and so forth.
So it varies tremendously, doesn't it?
It does, and that's the problem that people...
It's quite free, though, isn't it?
It's very free because yeah. it's what you bring to it mm-hmm. and what you look at
mm-hmm.
is what makes it... It's your connection with the divine mm-hmm. rather than somebody telling you mm. how to connect with the divine.
And it's your spiritual path of discovery.
Absolutely,
isn't
yeah,
it? It's
yeah.
a very individual, personal thing.
Yeah. As I say, I will help people learn their path, but yeah. I can't teach them my path.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break there because this is just fascinating stuff and we're having more fun with the music because we're now going to play a track from the Waterboys and this is called A Pagan Place. And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Pom and the not-so-well Puff.
Yes, I'm surviving.
But we're not allowed to make him laugh because otherwise he...
I will probably have a coughing fit and die.
And, you know, we want to finish the programme, so can you please just stay alive until 10 o'clock?
Yes,
for and sure. And we've lost the priest. She's gallivanting around in Sydney, working very hard, I'm sure. Good evening, Priestie, if you're listening. And we are joined once again with Sean Goddard-Chase. Absolute delight to have you back on the show because you are the font of all knowledge. And tonight we're talking about paganism, which I have to say is a real eye-opener for me. And just encourage anyone listening, if you have an opinion or a contribution to make about paganism, we would absolutely love to hear from you. You can SMS us on 0427-JOY-949, phone 1300-JOY-949 and speak to the lovely Heath on the switchboard. And the email is onair@joy.org.au. So we were just chattering on while the music was playing. Andrew, one of your questions was, how do pagans actually worship and where? Like, do they have churches or...?
They have holy days.
Holidays?
Holy days.
Oh, I thought you said holiday.
Holidays.
Those are holidays.
I love holidays.
So do I. Again, it would depend upon what sect path you're following.
Mm-hmm.
But there are temples. Mm-hmm. There are churches. There's the Wiccan Church within Australia. The Druids in England are trying to, I think they've actually had one or two now, but they're trying to do certain rituals at Stonehenge again.
Gosh, which,
yeah, but of course it's falling down. So.
Well, yeah, I used to drive past Stonehenge a lot on the way to our little pad in the country, and they, luckily, when you were able to walk all the way around it, I got to do it. In fact, with a photographer friend of mine, who got special license to go there very early one morning to watch the sunrise, and I went with her, which was great. She's from New York. And hi, Patty, if you're listening. And but not long after that, yeah, they closed it off because it is falling to bits. It's crumbling.
People were taking bits off it. They were chipping bits off it and things like that.
I wish people would leave things alone.
Yeah. So it depends on... I mean, I have friends who have full moon rituals.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a full moon, they'll get together and do a ritual, which can be anything from they just dance around to sitting and just talking about mm-hmm. things that have happened, depending on the mix as well. There are all girl groups that I know. And
that
they'll just
discuss.
Yeah, it is. I'm sure they have a lot of fun. I'm very honoured because they actually tell me what they've talked about, which is really good. But they'll talk about things that have happened within the month, and, and it's sort of like a, it's almost like a counselling session in a lot of ways. So, but they just share things with each other. So,
so when you say full moon, you know, they might have a ritual. Are they dancing? Or when you say ritual, is that a celebration? Are they celebrating something? Does the full moon mean a change in season or something? Or
full moon is normally, particularly for people who follow the goddess. Is when she's at her most powerful, if you will. It's when the mother energy is at its most potent, which is why most people will do a ritual on the full moon. I have a friend of mine who's a nurse who works in a psychiatric hospital, and she said they always know when it's a full moon. It actually does affect people in different ways. But there are friends of mine who do a very serious ritual, so they'll do what's called casting a circle. So they actually create a circle on the ground, call up the elements and that kind of thing, call the god and the goddess to come in, and they'll do that very sort of, if you will, almost a religious ceremony, spiritual ceremony. That's a very formal way of doing it. Or they may sit down with food and drink and give thanks as well. Depending on sort of, also depending if, you know, if it's winter, summer, that also has an effect, seasonal changes.
So these rituals, these get-togethers, are they the same as the festivals that pagans hold, or is that something completely different?
The festivals, there's eight, what they call eight holy days through the year, and they sort of represent, there's a tale of the god and goddess, which from very ancient times is the birth of the god. He grows up. He then either fights himself or an older god, and the older god is actually wounded, or he is wounded, depending. It's the dying, resurrecting god, which is up until midsummer. On midsummer is when he actually receives the wound, and then he starts to die when you're heading towards winter, and the sun becomes less potent. And then at the winter solstice, he dies, and the goddess actually then goes into the underworld to bring him back. And actually confronts, and what it is basically she confronts, she goes into herself and she confronts herself and releases everything, and at the end of it finds him and brings him back as a child. So, yeah, and that's sort of how the cycle, that's a really basic telling of the tale, but that's the basic cycle of, and so each of the eight represents a particular time.
So you've referred to goddesses a lot. I mean, is there a leader for pagans, or a figurehead?
There's not really a figurehead as such. There are people that you respect their wisdom, so it's more the merit of the person. Starhawk's a very famous pagan who's written quite a few books, and a lot of people look to her for guidance. There's a lovely, lovely woman called Lucy Cavendish who's in Australia, who a lot of people look to guidance as well. Wendy Rule's another one that I'm aware of. There's a lot of others as well. I'm sorry I haven't mentioned you by name if you hear this. I'm having trouble remembering everybody's names tonight. I apologise. So a lot of them are women. There's not a lot of men. There was a man called Alan Cunningham who wrote an awful lot of books upon Wicca and being a solitary practitioner.
So this sounds like it's quite a popular religion for women.
It is. It's actually an amazingly empowering religion for women and path, because it's because there is a goddess. They've got somebody that they can then, you know,
relate to,
and they're not considered secondary beings as such. Within paganism itself, it's males and females should actually be equal. There are some goddess circles, the Dianic circle, who believe that women are actually the superior breed to men.
We know.
So many of them have told me that. I've had a lot of arguments with Dianic circle followers. But at the end of the day, paganism and the following, it really is an awful lot about balance between masculine, feminine, dark and light. Not good and evil, but light and dark. So negative and positive, if you will. And that's the main sort of thrust of it, if you will. So it's that balance between the two.
Now, is there a symbol that pagans identify with?
A lot of them use the pentacle now, which is a five-pointed star, and it's not inverted or anything like that. And it actually represents what universally and generally accepted to be the five elements. Mm-hmm. So you've got air, earth, fire, water, but then you also have spirit, mm-hmm. which is what actually ignites, if you will, mm-hmm. and creates. So everything has these, a mixture of these five elements within it, uh-huh. and that's why they have that as a symbol. Mm-hmm. There's the tree is also becoming a more popular, the world tree, mm-hmm. which is very Nordic. Mm-hmm. Yggdrasil was the world tree of the old Nordic mythology, mm-hmm. so that's becoming. And also Thor's hammer is making a comeback. One of my favourite T-shirts, which I wish to get, and I apologise if I offend anybody with this one, but it's actually Thor with his hammer, and it says, "Your god was nailed to a cross, mine carries a hammer." kind of thing. So there's this, you know, play on words. Mm-hmm. Not a good thing to wear at Easter, I have been told. Yeah.
No, maybe just don't.
And I've actually said to my friends, don't wear it at Easter because it is actually a little bit disrespectful. Mm. But they're some of the symbols that are coming up. The yin-yang symbol also, mm-hmm. because it creates balance. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up as well. So there's sort of other ones, yeah, that are beginning to arise, but they're the main ones.
Fabulous, fabulous stuff. Now we're going to go to another tune, and actually we should be singing Happy Birthday, because it is Nelson Mandela's birthday today, bless him.
Happy birthday, Nelson.
He is 93, so Nelson, if you're listening, a very happy birthday. And to celebrate your birthday, we are going to play some Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and this is called World in Union. And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Pom and the Puff not feeling so well.
No, I'm feeling a little bit under the weather.
No. So we're sharing his germs in the studio, and we have Sean Goddard.
There's enough distance. There's enough distance, and there's a couple microphones in the way.
Can you just stop breathing, please? And we're joined with Sean Goddard Chase once again, and we're having the most fascinating conversation tonight about paganism. We've just had another email in, which I'd like to read out. This is from Anonymous. What's their viewpoint on Judaism? Controversial, I believe.
Beginning to think I might actually know this person, because my viewpoints on Judaism are actually controversial. I would like to start out by saying that I have a love of Judaism. I used to work in a synagogue as a caretaker for 5 years, mm-hmm. And actually had some very, very big conversations with the rabbi about what they believe. And I don't have any hatred or dislike, unlike a lot of other pagans who do, mm-hmm. Against Judaism. I actually consider Judaism to be a pagan religion. I actually consider all of them to be a pagan religion. and that they're just another way of viewing the world.
Is there, excuse me, is there one particular issue that could be controversial? Or?
I have a view on who Moses was. Which is considered very controversial.
Okay.
Which was, there was a pharaoh called Akhenaten, who was actually the father of Tutankhamun, and he actually introduced monotheism to Egypt, and they worshipped the Aten, which was the sun or solar disk, and his brother was known as Thutmosis. Now, Tut actually means prince. Mm-hmm. If you take Tut away, you're just left with Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And having read the Torah and so forth, Moses was actually considered to be a brother of the pharaoh at the time, and they had a falling out and he ran away. So I'm pretty sure people can put two and two together and see where my controversial viewpoint starts coming into it. Amongst biblical scholars at the moment, this is a bit controversial as well, but the Torah and so forth that we know that mm-hmm. the Judaica follows wasn't actually finalized until about between 800 and 600 BCE. Mm. I say BCE because that's before Common Era rather than BC, which is before Christ.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. And Thutmosis and the followers of Akhenaten actually disappeared after he was overthrown. And his name was actually erased from Egyptian history. His face, any statue of him was destroyed.
Goodness.
Anything that was depicted about him in hieroglyphs was destroyed.
Yep.
Everything was completely and utterly destroyed. And Tutankhamun was actually known as Tutankhaten
mm-hmm.
when he was first born. And Amun was actually the head god at the time in Egypt, which is why we now know him as Tutankhamun.
And paganism was quite strong in Egypt, was
Absolutely,
it
yes. It's one of the what they considered the birthplaces, Isis, Osiris, so much of what we consider. It's huge. It is absolutely huge.
It's much, much, much bigger than I think.
And it is a lot bigger.
Any of us realise. Yes. And in fact, that brings me to my next question. I mean, it's been around for thousands and thousands of years, and most people know very little about paganism, and I think are quite sceptical, probably due to the media's portrayal that it's somehow quite sinister, and I know we've covered that a little bit. But why do you think paganism has such a misconstrued image? Is it because people just believe the sort of mythology?
Well, basically for 1600 years, they have been turned into the bad guy.
By who? By the media?
Actually, by the church to begin with. Okay. As I was talking about, the horned god before was turned into the devil. Mm-hmm. And any women who were found to be worshipping the devil were obviously witches and in league with dark forces because they also celebrated with a full moon as well, this dark full moon again. And a lot of scholars at the time knew about a Greek goddess called Hecate, who in ancient Greece was actually known as the witch's goddess as well. And she was a bit dark and sinister in the way that she was portrayed. Again, because of patriarchal, that's when she changed. So she was basically a moon goddess as well. But, yeah, 1600 years, you've got people telling you that pagans are evil. Mm-hmm. It's a long time. It starts to sink in.
Yeah. And then it's passed down.
Yeah, you have wars. Yeah. You have inquisitions. You actually have entire villages that were wiped out. One of the most famous lines was, "Kill them all and let God decide," was actually said by a general of the Inquisition when they wiped out an entire village, men, women and children. So that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of people say dark. A lot of stuff that's actually happened to the pagan community has been dark as well. And a lot of the people who were actually killed were actually midwives and herbalists and things like that.
Just innocent
women who were basically, you know, they went about their trade. And then, of course, you've got the other side, which is that the doctors were wanting to be the sole proprietors of medicine, and so that they helped controversy, you know, dark and sinister plots, things like that. So,
well, it has been absolutely fascinating hour. It's gone far too fast again. We're going to have to leave it there, and I'd like to say to Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me in.
Just fascinating. And now we are going to play our last song, which, in fact, you're going to introduce this song because it means something to you.
It does. Leanne Rimes, Can't Find the Moonlight, is actually one of the main songs that my friends use when they're doing a full moon ceremony, and they dance too.
I bet you Leanne Rimes doesn't know that.
I hope she does. She does now. She'll be listening, of course.
Under a lover's sky, gonna be with you.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Tonight's show is going to be available on our podcast. It's spiritlounge949.weebly.com. So you'll be able to have a look there and comment. Let us know what you think of the show.
Wonderful topic on paganism. Thank you to Sean. Fabulous. So now next is The Cubby House with Kevin, Jack and Cookie, known as The Cubs. It's all about the bear community. And we'll see you next Monday at 9 o'clock when the priest will be back with us.
Absolutely.
Bye for now.
See you next week.
Melbourne's biggest gay voice has a fresh new sound.
Fresh new sound.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.